Welcome to Dodgers Dogs. I'm Casey Porter. I will not be joined by Chase Witwiska this week. He and his team are in Alabama. They have a spring break trip. So I'm flying solo, and we have a lot to get to tonight. So I will be relying on the crowd to provide a lot of input here. But we do have a whole lot to get into tonight. We're going to talk about the roster cuts that were made, that, you know, you have to trim the rosters as you go along in spring training. Good evening to the crowd and everybody that's going to join this evening. We're also going to talk about, you know, next week I'm going to release, we're going to start releasing individual features for every single player in the MLB Pipeline Top 30 Prospects list. And here's the deal about that. The first thing that I wanted to say about that was, here are some of the notable names that were left off of the MLB Pipeline list. Hunter Fiducia, Kyle Hurt, Nick Robertson, Mark Washington, Drew Avens, Carson Taylor, Andre Jackson, Brandon Lewis, Cole Percival, Ben Harris, Taylor Young, Devin Mann, Jordan Leisure, Lyle Lockhart Jr., who was Arkansas's Friday night star. Jordan Leisure, man, he went like, one of the longest periods of time last summer, gave up like one run in like 35 outings. Justin Yurchek, he actually had a higher batting average than Miguel Vargas did in the year that Miguel Vargas won the AA hitting championship. Yurchek can absolutely, he can hit. Lyle Lockhart Jr. was the Friday night starter for Arkansas. Devin Mann, who's hitting close to 300 for the big club, versatile, can play anywhere across the diamond, and he played everywhere in the diamond except for pitcher and catcher for Tulsa. Aldry Acosta, go and check his numbers. He's a big guy, and he got hurt, but when he came back, he didn't give up. I don't think he gave up a single run in like his last 10 or 11 outings for Great Lakes. He was fantastic. Carlos Duran, who was, you know, I know he's going through Tommy John surgery, but, you know, he was one of the biggest prospects in the entire organization for a long, long time. He was definitely in the top 30 prospects list this time last year. Suffered some injuries this year, fought them on and off. Pitched well at times, but again, fought injuries. Okay, then also, Yun-Il Choi, who was the Dodgers Minor League Pitcher of the Year in 2021. Good evening, Austin. How are you doing this evening? Again, I do not have Chase, so hopefully we can get a pretty big audience for this and we can start talking about all the stuff that we have to talk about tonight. Right now, what I'm talking about is all the notable names that were left off of the MLB Pipeline list. If I miss one, go ahead and correct me on that and put a name on there that you think should be there. Yun-Il Choi, who is the 2021 Dodgers Minor League Pitcher of the Year, not on the top 30 prospects list. Braden Fisher, which is understandable because he's been on. Of course, it seems like he's older than he is, but because he's been in the system, I think, since like 2018 or something like that. But, you know, he got drafted out of high school, so he's still only like 21, 22 years old. Ryan Sublette, I'm telling you, this guy, the Sublette slider in Austin, I know you saw Ryan quite a bit. I saw him quite a bit at Texas Tech. This dude is fantastic. He is so good. Ryan Sublette, that three-quarter slot. You know, he's able to have that three-quarter slot but still stay on top of the ball, which allows him to still have that ride and run, and he has that slider. Ryan Sublette, fantastic, not on the top 30 prospects list. Kendall Williams, who has been on that list before. Emanuel Vargas, who led all of the Midwest League in OPS for like the entire season last year and most of half the season in 2021. He's not on the top 30 prospects list. Jake Vogel, who struggled with the batting average, but still, you know, one of the fastest guys in the league. If you just want to look at just tools and prospect type stuff, I still think he's a very good prospect. Now, if you just want to look at numbers, I can understand that. Peter Hubeck, who was on this list last year, and, you know, again, if you want to look at numbers in a single-A scenario, but I can tell you this right now, Peter Hubeck, I had a chance to talk to him about a month ago. His goal was to get over 190 pounds. He's been able to do that. He has the big curveball. He's adding a slider to it. The fastball is hitting 4 and 5, so Peter Hubeck, not on this list. That surprises me. And Justin Robleski, this is obvious. Nobody knows a whole lot about him because he has not pitched a full season. Okay, and for those of you who are going to get to see him in Great Lakes next year in person, this guy is legit. Trust me. Justin Robleski, 100% legit. I love this guy. I got to see all of his starts at Oklahoma State. This guy fits all the metrics. He does all the things off the field. He does all the things on the field. You know, all the intangibles off the field are perfect, and his stuff is big, big time. Just nobody knows about him because he had Tommy John surgery halfway through his last year of college at Oklahoma State, And he hasn't thrown, you know, he kind of threw a little bit last year, hasn't thrown a full season. Yeah, we'll talk about Emmanuel Vargas. He's super good, no doubt about it. He has a great eye at the plate, great plate discipline. Okay, so, yeah, Justin Robles, you know about him. Sean McClain, young man out of Arizona State, shortstop type guy, great defensive player. I mean, really flashy. He really showed out at spring training. So, Sean McClain, Bubba Alin, who was the Big Ten Player of the Year, and boy, he was fantastic at Maryland. Got his start last year with Rancho Cucamonga. Kyle Nevin, who is the son of Phil Nevin. So there are some of the notable names that I felt like, you know, hey, man, you could make it an entire Hunter Verducci. I mentioned him. You know, Kyle Hurt, when he pitches with confidence, he is one of the most talented pitchers, young pitchers in the game. So those are some of the names that I felt like were notable that were left off. If you have any that you would like to add to that, go right ahead in the crowd. Some other things that we're going to talk about tonight, Dustin May. Okay, so here's my thoughts on him. And the thing about, you know, Tommy John surgery and Dustin May coming off of that, I always felt like last year, I didn't even feel like really the Dodgers should have put him on the 40-man. As a matter of fact, if you go back to my article I wrote about the roster situations right before the playoffs, I did not even put Dustin May on them. And the reason why I did not was, you know, obviously from a physical perspective, he could throw. But my reasoning was, hey, although it's only 12 to 13 months to get back from Tommy John physically, okay, then it takes quite a bit longer to get the feels back, you know. So just because you're not feeling any pain physically doesn't mean that anything feels the same. And what guys tell you is it doesn't feel the same. And so I didn't think he was going to have good enough feels to have command well enough to trust him in a playoff setting. He didn't. And so I thought last year was unrealistic. I thought they could have used that spot for somebody else that, you know, was healthier, that could have used maybe a James Altman type guy. Of course, they probably would have replaced him with a pitcher. But I think there are plenty of candidates to that. We're going to talk about Noah Syndergaard's velocity. Are you worried about his velocity? Leave me your thoughts in the comments. We're going to talk about the role of Ryan Pepiot, you know, with Tony Gonsolin going down. We've talked about this several different times. I think Ryan Pepiot is the first pitcher up to fill that fifth spot. The Dodgers, more than likely, unless they have to, they're not going to just predefined go to a six-man rotation, because I think they're pretty aware of the fact that when you have two guys that are coming off of Tommy John, you have Clayton Kershaw, who's been known to go down a little bit, you know, and then Julio Urias, who's coming off his 2 years of throwing the most he ever has before, and Tony Gonsolin with a record of injury. I think when you have that, I think the Dodgers know you don't have to pre-plan a six-man rotation. It's probably just going to happen normally. So when that happens, I think Ryan Pepiot is the first guy up. We're going to talk about some of the adjustments he made. We're going to hear from him, and we're going to talk about his possible role here in 2023. We're also going to talk about Max Muncy. What do you guys think about Max Muncy? He hit a home run the other day. We're going to talk about some of his statistics. I know going back to last August, man, I mean, he was like 256, OPS 800, somewhere in there. And then September, he was somewhere in the 260 range. And now he's starting to hit. Jeremy Bird, hi all, go blue. Thank you for joining, Jeremy, so much for joining our conversation this evening. Again, usually I have my partner Chase with me, and I'm a little bit sick, not sick, but just kind of got a little bit of a head cold to me, so I'm struggling just a touch, so I could really use some help from the crowd this evening. Thank you so much, Austin, for joining, commenting. Thank you so much, Jeremy, for commenting as well. We're also going to hear from Landon Knack, Michael Grove. We're going to hear from Gavin Stone. And we're also going to hear from James Altman and kind of hear a little bit about what his approach is at the plate. And I also want to know from the first question I have for the crowd is, do you think James Altman, A, do you think he will make the opening day roster? And B, if he does, is he going to be the everyday starting center fielder? James Altman, it's an enigma because he's very, very good defensively. And I know Jason Hayward's very good defensively as well, but you know, you got all these outfielders. You know, you got these veteran outfielders like Peralta and Hayward and Duggar and Zimmer and all these guys, you know, and then you have James Altman who just, what else can the guy do? And it seems like every time that the organization or Dave Roberts talks about James Altman, it's always in some kind of code that you can't really break. You know, you can't really tell what they're thinking. It's almost, as if it's like they're surprised that he's performing this well, and it's almost like his performance being this good is putting them in a bad spot because they're just kind of wanting to start him in AAA and put all their veterans on the roster first and see how that goes. But again, that's just kind of my opinion there. But all James can do is just continue to, you know, hit the way that he's capable of hitting and keep doing what he's capable of doing. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Again, the MLB Pipeline Top 30 Prospects List. I'm going to get to that here in a minute. Let me read that off to you here in just a second. Let me get to it. I'm going to read that prospects list. So number one, obviously, was Diego Cartaya. And then number two was Bobby Miller. I was surprised to see that Ryan Pepiot made it back up. I was glad to see him make it back up. But Diego Cartaya, number one. Anybody have any comments about that? Is that, you know, are we all pretty much on board? That's the way it should be. And then Bobby Miller, are we surprised that Bobby Miller hasn't seen time on the big field this year? You know, that's another interesting situation that Bobby Miller and Gavin Stone aren't on the 40-man roster. Boy, Gavin Stone, how good has he been this year? So I think what we're going to do first is we're going to get to some comments from some of the players, and we're going to talk about some of the comments they had. I think we're going to start. Okay, let's start. I just mentioned just a minute ago with James Outman. Hey, do you think James Outman is going to make the opening day roster? Do you think James Outman is going to be the starter for the Los Angeles Dodgers if he does make the opening day roster? So let's go ahead and hear from James himself.
I'm always trying to up my power and lower my strikeouts, like no matter what. And I'm always trying to hit the ball as hard as I can. But at the same time, I want to know when the right time to pick my battles are. If I'm facing a guy, you know, if I'm facing a guy like Gavin Stone, that might not be a guy where I'm going to take a shot and try and hit a home run, because his stuff is so good that, you know, you just need to like bear down and compete. So maybe the experience helped with that a little bit. But, you know, honestly, I like for myself, I feel like I'm striking out less when I'm just trying to hit the ball hard, which, you know, I'm not trying to swing out of my shoes, but I'm just trying to hit the ball hard, stay controlled and be athletic and let my athleticism take over. When I get in the box and I'm like, okay, don't strike out here, you could bet money that I'm going to strike out if I get that thought in my head. And I think a lot of guys are like that too. But, you know, I honestly just think I'm always trying to get the hitting numbers this way and get the strikeout numbers this way. I'm trying to make as big a gap as possible between those.
Have the Dodgers given you a certain sliding scale or a certain metric that, you know, maybe numbers-wise that would be the good trade-off between power and striking out? Have they given you any kind of metrics like that, or they just let you be you?
You know, not really. They want guys to be themselves. Obviously, I want to cut my strikeouts down. I know mm-hmm. I have a high strikeout clip, but, you know, I know I'm not going to get there by chasing a stat. So sure. I'm just going to try and treat every at-bat like – you know, it's the same, and you know, sometimes I'm going to punch, and I'm going to punch more than someone else. But I think just understanding when I can put together those at bats and really focus on battling and just train that, I think I'll be better off for it.
So there's James Outman. There's his thoughts on, you know, kind of his approach. And the thing about that that's interesting to me is that, you know, in today's day and age with all the modern day technology and the data and the StatCast and the Rapsodo machines and all the TrackMan information that you get, you know, he likes to simplify it into, you know, he has a background in football. He's a middle linebacker at Sarah there, and he really gives his football coaches a lot of credit for the toughness. And if you've seen, of course, all you got to do is watch one of our live feeds and you see the trailer, you know, the kind of the fearlessness he has around the wall. Very aggressive. So, you know, he went to Sac State. Reggie, there at Sac State, the head coach, was the only coach that gave James Outman a chance to play college baseball. So when he went to Sac State, one thing about Reggie is Reggie's a big-time defensive stickler. So the very first thing that James Outman really put, you know, stock into was his defense. So when, you know, when he came up and people were talking like he wasn't, you know, the best of defensive player, and it just didn't make any sense to me, because that actually has always been what he's done the best. So James Outman, his defense has always been there. The arm's good. The fundamentals are absolutely fantastic. Yeah, Austin, that keeps him consistent. Okay, really like his approach to limit strikeouts while keeping power. Okay, love the way he approaches his plate appearances, not stats. That's exactly kind of what I'm talking about here. He just likes to let his athletic ability take over. Don't make it too complicated. You know, the old KISS theory, keep it simple, stupid. You know, it's not quite that simple. But when you have a guy that's as talented as James Outman, you know, the more simplicity, the better for him. And I think that's shown. And I like the comment that he made. I usually try to see if the ISO is greater than the K percentage. If it is, I think it is a good trade-off for power and strikeouts. Glad to hear he doesn't chase that, though. Yeah, I was interested to hear that too, Austin, as far as numbers, because again, he feels like if he chases numbers, he's probably gonna, you know, he's gonna be having the wrong thoughts in his head. So James Outman likes to let his athletic ability take over. It has absolutely worked for him, and he has done, you know, I mean, he's, I think we would have to all agree that he's taken advantage of the opportunities he's given. So it'll be interesting to see if James Outman, you know, will A, be on the opening day 26-man roster, and B, if he is, will he be the starter? Okay, what are your thoughts on Michael Bush? I mean, I think you know my thoughts, and I think Michael Bush is one of the best young hitters in the game. He got off to a little bit of a slow start, had three hits on Monday. His average is all the way up to 261. His OPS is over 800, and then boom, he gets cut. But I understand that. I mean, you can't keep everybody, and cuts happen. And here's the situation with me at this point. You know, these guys are going to – these are, you know, you're talking about Diego Cartaya, Yorbit Vivas, Eddie Leonard, Johnny DeLuca, Andy Páez, Michael Bush. These are guys that weren't going to make the opening day roster. We knew that. Michael Bush, I think that the writing's been on that wall for quite a bit, a long time. So why wait? You know, the guys that are actually – going to be on the 26-man roster, let's let them fight it out. Let's kind of define things, how those things are going to go in terms of who we pretty much already know. Now, I do think, you know, Andy Páez has lost 25 pounds over the offseason. He's the cycle king of AAA. Yeah, James Outman hit for two cycles last year and two grand slams, and his two cycles were within a week of each other. He has consistently performed at each level the past two seasons. He has a WRC plus of 135 or greater at every level since 2021. Incredibly consistent for Outman. And Austin, you know, in 2021, when he came up to Tulsa from your Great Lakes Loons, he was unbelievable for that whole rest of that summer. So that was a whole lot of fun for him to watch. So these guys that got, but going back to the guys that got cut today, might as well get it out over the way. I mean, none of these guys were going to make the opening day roster. That does not to say that some of these guys won't make their major league debut this year, but that's just to say they weren't going to be on the opening day roster. So I think these were all pretty much expected moves, moves that make total sense. Of course, if it was up to me, Michael Bush would be getting 300 major league at-bats. I think we know that. He is just simply a fantastic hitter. Just doesn't, you know, where's he going to play defensively? You know, the outfield defense isn't good enough for Michael Bush to put him in a major league outfield. I can just tell you that right now. That was never going to happen. It was either going to be second base or first base. And now that Miguel Vargas is that, you know, they put him where I saw the opportunities was if they put, you know, maybe Miguel Vargas in left field, you know, especially before they acquired David Peralta, you know, where I saw maybe the window, especially after, you know, Gavin Lux goes down, you know, before they get Peralta, that kind of thing, all those scenarios, you're thinking, well, maybe they could put Miguel Vargas in left field. That opens up a spot for Michael Bush to get to second base and that kind of deal. But it just seems like, you know, I've said it two or three times, every move they made, just every single move they made, made it harder to get Michael Bush at bat. So I think, you know, inevitably, writing was on the wall. He was not going to make the opening day 26-man roster. At this point, you know, he's getting older. So I, you know, the philosophy here is, hey, either play him or trade him. So I think we're at the point, was a little disappointed to see Bush sent to the minors, but I'm glad he has a defined role to start the season. I think The defensive aspect will be important for him to find a place in LA. Yeah, no doubt about it. And then, what you know, with Mookie Betts wanting to move back to second base, that complicates things again because that moves Vargas to third. And then, you know, that. So I think we're at a point where you got to start thinking about trading Michael Bush. I mean, it's either play him or trade him. Just nothing the Dodgers are doing suggests to me that they have any future plans to make him an everyday second baseman on this club or first baseman. You know, you have Max Muncy and Freddie Freeman. So I think you're at the point where you start, you know, you start looking at packages that you can put Michael Bush in and send him off and see what you can get in return. I think that's where you're at with him because as a prospect guy, you know, I'm not a prospect hugger in the sense I want the Dodgers to keep them all. I want the prospects to have the quickest path to the major leagues. Okay, so I think Ryan Pepiot has the first shot at that fifth spot in rotation when somebody like Tony Gonsolin, by the way, Tony Gonsolin started throwing long toss today. He's a good trade ship. I would agree with that, especially right now. Just got three hits. I think his trade value is at its highest right now. So I think we're at that point, you know, play him or trade him. I'd be curious to get Austin's thought on that. Play him or trade him, I think you're at the trade him spot just based on the moves that the Dodgers have made around him. Okay, so Gonsolin started throwing long toss, you know, but okay, so in my opinion, Ryan Pepiot gets that fifth spot first. We're going to talk about some of the adjustments that Ryan Pepiot has made this year. Okay, we're going to hear from Pepiot first, and then we'll talk about some of the adjustments. I'll expand on some of the adjustments he talks about in this comment.
I don't want to go out there and throw 30 pitches every inning. I want to be able to go deep in the ball games, go more than five, six innings, you know, be an innings eater, whatever the role is, whether it's throw a few innings in the bullpen, throw a couple nights in a row out of the bullpen, or make starts. Just go out there and do my job and put up as many zeros as I can and just try to keep the guys in the ball, guys a chance to win the ball game. So like you said, it was a lot about being more efficient, and I've been working a lot trying to get my body in different places so that I can access the zone so I can be more efficient. So that was, like you said, it kind of all cohesively goes together to try to make sure I can be more efficient and get outs faster. Faster I get outs, faster I get to sit down, faster the guys get to get off the field and go put up some runs. A couple of times when I got myself in some big jams, like in my debut when I think it was like the second inning and I had the bases loaded and Brian Reynolds was up, I was like, okay, you did this to yourself. Just go get yourself out of it.
Going with three pitches this year, the fastball, slider, and change?
Yep, still three pitches. I have a couple I can always wrinkle in, but those are the three I'm going with.
Which ones could you wrinkle in? Can you say that on the air, or do you want to keep that?
No, I can say on the air. It's more like manipulating the slider. Can make a slider like cuttery, make it a little bit bigger. So can kind of categorically say it's a couple more pitches, but it's just one, just manipulated a little differently.
Which pitches do you feel the most comfortable landing in the strike zone whenever you need them?
Right now, I'm feeling pretty good with all three. So fastball's feeling really good. Changeup, I'm getting back to where I want it from a couple years ago. Last season, it was a little more on the horizontal side. This year, I've got more depth to it. So I'm feeling really good with where I'm at right now going into this year.
Okay, so there's some thoughts from Ryan Pepiot. What are some things that stick out to you about what he said right there, about what Ryan Pepiot said? Number one, I think the thing that sticks out the most about what he said was he modified his changeup. You know, his changeup had a lot of fade to it, so he eliminated some fade and kept the tumble to keep keep it a pitch that he can control a bit better, so he can be, you know, as he's listed as three pitch pitcher, can be up to five pitches. And the next thing, you know, he worked on his body so he can get his body in positions that's going to allow him to more easily throw strikes, you know. And then the third thing, I found it interesting when I said, hey, what pitches do you feel like you can land anytime you need? And he said all of them. So I thought that was pretty telling of Ryan Pepiot, the confidence that he's shown. And I think he has been more efficient this year. Also, did you get a chance to see Jeff Belge's outing for Tampa Bay today? I did not. I have communicated with Jeff a couple of times. I love that young man. A pair of strikeouts against Boston. Great to see. You know, I'm glad you said it, Austin, because I'm going to check that out. I'm going to go ahead and rip that and put that on Twitter because I love Jeff and I love his dad, Thomas. And actually, I was talking to him the other day about a pitcher named Brian Henry that pitched at St. John's with Jeff. And I was asking Jeff what he thought about Brian, and Jeff was telling me how good Brian is. Brian actually threw the other day for Oklahoma State on Sunday. So, hey, I'm glad you said that. I love Jeff Belge, young man who lost all vision in his right eye. You know, he was skipping rocks and hit his eye when he was younger, you know, like in sixth grade, and then had surgery, and then they were just playing around at a baseball tournament in the hotel one day, and it busted it again, and now he doesn't have vision in his right eye, and it's a professional baseball pitcher now with only vision in his left eye. And I know he came back to Great Lakes about halfway through last year. He is very thankful to Rob Hill and all the people that helped him get back. Wonderful young man. Thank you for bringing up Jeff Belge. But back to Ryan Pepiot, one of the things that stuck out about him to me was the confidence that he showed in being able to throw all of his pitches in the strike zone. Here's a little bit different slant for me, though. You know, my opinion, you know, they're going to allow Julio Urias and Clayton Kershaw, and if Walker Buehler was still healthy, I think they're going to allow those two, and then if Dustin May shows that he's healthy, but I think at this point they're going to allow Urias and Kershaw to go three times through the lineup, because sabermetrics would tell you the third time through the lineup is not advantageous for a pitcher. I don't think, you know, at least consistently, maybe you disagree with this, that they're going to let Ryan Pepiot go three times through a lineup, you know, all the way through it. So, you know, I mean, what's more important as far as that guy? Getting outs or being efficient, you know? So, I mean, making him a strike thrower is going to make him a little more hittable. So, you know, if he's more hittable, does he, you know, one thing he has done very well is he's been able to get outs in big situations, both in AAA, you know, and at the major league level. So, if you make him more of a strike thrower, does it make it harder for him to get out of those jams? So, you know, is the efficiency more important, or is the nasty stuff that's tumbling out of the zone getting swing and miss, which one's more important with him? That's kind of a finesse type deal. Hey, let's move on to Michael Grove. And I know, we have some comments here. Honestly, I think that is where they're at with Michael Busch. If it gets him a better opportunity and increases the Dodgers' odds to win the World Series, I think that makes the most sense and will be best for both. You and I are on the same page with that comment, no doubt about it. Michael Busch, I think we're at that point, either play him or trade him. Okay, so I think the next guy that gets the opportunity as far as a starting role would be Michael Grove. And I know Grover, he had a tough second inning the other day, but, you know, he recovered and had a good third inning. And one thing that Michael said last year that he didn't feel like he did a great job with was he didn't feel like he had a put-away pitch. You know, he has that big curveball and he has the four-seam fastball. Very athletic. So, you know, one thing Michael did in the offseason was that he wanted to develop a put-away pitch. So let's hear from Michael and let's get some thoughts from him, and then we'll chew on that, leave some thoughts about Michael Grove.
Yeah, I think that the curveball, just because it's so depthy, it's really a good pitch to lefties. I still throw it to righties some. The slider was more because I needed an out pitch against righties. So just having something in between the big curveball and then the fastball just gives people a different look, and you have to respect more than one off-speed pitch.
So how do you feel like that pitch came along for you?
I felt like there were spurts where it was really good and spurts where it was not so good. So it's going to have a little bit different of a shape this year, and I think it's pretty good right now. So I'm excited about kind of what I, you know, tinkered with it in the offseason. The back stretch where I got some consistent starts, started to realize, like, you know, I was really good at getting to two strikes with, you know, dumping a curveball and then, you know, fastball. And then once I got to two strikes, I didn't feel like I had great put away pitches. And so that's part of the reason I tinkered just with the slider a little bit, was I need a pitch that's different that, I don't have to show until two strikes, or, you know, I can get away with, you know, in a 1-1 count, just more swing and miss type stuff. But aside from that, I mean, just trying to keep competing and, you know, making sure the mental side of it's as good as possible.
Yep, so there's Michael Grove. I know he had a bit of a tough second inning. His first outing was very good, but then he recovered and had a good third inning. I do think he's going to get major league innings. I think he's going to be, you know, I think Pepiot gets first dibs at that. So getting back to some of the comments here, I highly doubt that they let Pepiot or almost any of their other arms go more than two times through the order. Follow numbers and trust the depth in the system for pitching depth when needed. I totally agree with that. I think that's exactly how they're going to go with that. So, again, you know, is efficiency all that important in today's day and age? I know, you know, we talk about all the pitches that Pepio threw last year, but he did have a 3.0 ERA, and you know, he was a Triple A All-Star, and he was a fantastic. I mean, his numbers were just off the charts great at Triple A last year. Although, you know, the efficiency numbers necessarily weren't, but the bottom line is he got outs and he did his job and he put his team in position to win. So if you're only going to go two times to the lineup, you know, how big of a deal is efficiency? That's kind of my question there. I'd love to hear your comments on that. Michael Grove, again, does he have that put away pitch this year with that slider? We shall see. He hopes that he, you know, in the offseason, he reshaped that slider to do that. So, you know, I think he's going to be the next guy. Then I think Andre Jackson's going to be the guy that, you know, he could spot start if he needs to. He could go to the bullpen. He can kind of be that swing guy. I've talked about this a couple of times. Very proud of Andre. I think he turned the corner last year. You know, he's on the development. He struggled to begin the year. He got put on the development list. And then, my opinion, I think he went down and I think he shaped his whole game around his changeup. And his changeup's very good. And I think because instead of chasing velo now, he's shaping everything around his changeup. I think that's why he has really come on. So I think Andre Jackson and Ryan Pepio, if there's only two to start on the roster, I think those would be the two that would start on the roster. Michael Grove would be next. Then you would have Gavin Stone. Okay, Gavin Stone, kind of like James Altman. I mean, what else can Gavin Stone do to, you know, I mean, how do you tell Gavin Stone he's not on the roster when he hasn't even given up a run yet, you know? I mean, and he's striking guys out, not really walking people. So, okay, had a chance to catch up with Gavin. Let's hear some thoughts from him, and then we'll chew on his thoughts with the audience and the crowd and some comments.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was just developing confidence in my pitches and developing confidence in the slider once I got, you know, to AAA. And I think that was just the biggest thing is, you know, if you have confidence in your pitches, you're going to throw them from strikes and see what happens. And that's kind of the mentality that I like to have whenever I get on the mound is, you know, just throw strikes, see what happens. If they hit it, they hit it. If they don't, they don't, you know. But, yeah, just developing confidence in my pitches and especially that changeup. You know, that was a big pitch for me last year. And so we'll see how it goes this year. Yeah, just, you know, hammering down, you know, getting in the zone a little bit more, figuring out how to, you know, piece together at bats, you know, sequence pitches, you know, because these guys are the real deal and I got to be on top of my game, you know, if I want to compete with them. So, you know, it takes a lot. It takes a lot on the mental side and it takes a lot on the physical side. So, you know, just getting better every day, 1% every day. That's just the main focus right now. Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely beneficial just because of, you know, that factor. But I know a lot of the other guys
he's talking,
you know,
about
have filled into that closer role or mid relief role.
So it's not foreign to,
you know, anybody. And I feel like we can all step up and, you know, get the job done. And I think that's a huge advantage, you know, being on the Dodgers is, you know, having those guys, you know, that can do that. And so, I think it's definitely beneficial and I'm comfortable in that role. So whatever they, you know, see fit for me is what I'll do. Yeah. I mean, you know, if I can get it as close to, you know, at the end of the year, I would like my stuff to be, you know, where it was at the end of the year. Cause I felt the best at the end of the year. So if I can get it back to that, you know, to start spring training or, you know, to go into the season, I feel like I'll be in a good spot for sure. I feel like everything. I've actually scrapped the two seam, and I'm working on a little curveball now. You know, just to keep hitters a little bit off balance. But yeah, everything feels good right now. Hopefully it stays like that. It's a constant adjustment week to week. You know, just keeping my grips comfortable, staying comfortable with my grips. But you know, it's a lot of fun, and that's the fun part about pitching is you always got to stay on your toes and make sure your grips are good and you feel good on the mound or you're not going to pitch good. So,
yep. So there's Gavin Stone. And I think Austin will tell you this is that, you know, a lot of people think that, of course, and it is a big deal. Hi, Orlando. How are you doing? Definition of trusting your stuff. No doubt about it. Thank you for joining, Orlando. I certainly appreciate it. We've talked about several different things so far. We still have quite a bit of the show left to get to. But the thing about Gavin Stone, and Austin will testify to this because I know Austin sat directly behind him. You know, last year was a huge year for him, but it was set up by the end of 2021. He was hitting 98 miles an hour, and 2021 really is when he mastered that changeup. And I talked to Carson Taylor, go to that Carson Taylor interview, and I'm going to put it on social media and cut some of it up. But I asked Carson Taylor, you know, what was it like catching Bobby Miller's 102-mile-an-hour fastball? What's it like catching Michael Grove's curveball? What's it like catching Gavin Stone's changeup? And Carson Taylor point blank said Gavin Stone's changeup is the best changeup he's ever caught. He's not used to being able to catch a guy at a professional level that can throw the same pitch four times in a row and get swing and miss four times in a row. So that's how good his changeup is, Gavin Stone. And Austin will tell you, saw him in person, that changeup was mastered at the end of 2021. Not surprised at all that 2022 went as well as it did for Gavin Stone. Wouldn't be surprised if his ETA is this year in 2023 for him as well. Gavin Stone, again, good evening, Orlando. Definition of trusting your stuff. That definitely is Gavin Stone. So thank you so much for joining Jeremy, Austin, and everybody else. We have a great crowd right now. Again, Chase is not with us. He's on a spring break baseball tour. We're talking about all sorts of different things. We're getting ready to talk about Noah Syndergaard, Dustin May, Max Muncy, all these things. We're talking about some of the pitching depth, some of the stuff. Hey, how about Eddie's Leonard? I know, you know, Austin, you got to see him quite a bit at Great Lakes. He is a great young player, and the thing about him is, you know, he just keeps getting bigger and stronger and building into his body. He's really showing out at spring training, so I'm very happy that Eddie's Leonard is showing out and taking advantage of his time. How about Hunter Fiducia? Did Hunter Fiducia not on the Dodgers' top 30 prospects list, but yet he's hitting 500 in spring training? Devin Mann, not on the Dodgers' top 30 prospects list, hitting almost 300 in spring training, OPS over 800. So there's two guys. Saw him in 2021 as well as 2022. Can testify to people seeing how good he was back then. Some people highly involved in the Loons organization in 2021 were super high on him then as well. So, yeah, thank you for the comments. Fantastic. Okay, so another guy that I am very excited to see, interested to see. I had a chance to talk to him, Landon Knack, and I've had a chance to talk to him twice now. Young man who didn't get drafted until after his senior year in college. He went to Walter State, which is one of the best JUCOs in the United States. He was out of Johnson City, Tennessee. Then he went to East Tennessee State, finally got drafted, was one of the top prospects, and then last year just fought injury after injury. Could not, his forearm kept, you know, he tried to come back a couple times like in June, July, somewhere in there. His forearm kept acting up on him. He just couldn't get things going. So he's dropped down some on the prospects list, but the thing about him is he is a very high-skilled pitcher. He locates the ball well, and he can throw four pitches for strikes at any time. So let's hear from Landon Knack, okay, one of the Dodgers' top prospects, pitching prospects, who is very motivated to get right back up on top of that list and show everybody that he's as good as anybody when he's healthy. Let's hear from him, and then let's get some audience thoughts on Landon Knack.
I felt pretty confident when I got up there. I had a little bit, of course, of nerves, like, and as soon as you open the gate to kind of run out. But once I actually got up there, it felt like I relaxed a little bit as soon as I kind of stepped on the mound, and felt good after that. I obviously, early on, wasn't really much of a high velo guy. I was more of just a guy who just knew how to pitch, knew how to fill up the strike zone with different pitches. And as my stuff got better, the velocity increased, the strikeout stuff stayed, and I felt like the command stayed as well. Obviously, just always attacking guys, always trying to get ahead. And so that continues to try to be a big piece for me. Kind of a tough year, kind of a like a little humbling experience, kind of really had to push through a lot of things. Had my forearm act on me in the middle of the year. I think going through kind of a little bit of like the trials of that and really the adversity that I kind of had to go through with that really is going to kind of help me moving forward. So I think going into this year, I've got a new appreciation for things, a new kind of outlook on how I go to work each day. And so I think it's actually going to be like more of like a blessing, honestly, moving forward.
So fans, are you excited about Landon Knack? And what, of course, again, the four pitches, he's, you know, he's 94 to 96 on the fastball, has the good four seam, slider, changeup, curve, and great command. He's one of the guys, you know, you talk about at lower levels, especially all these guys have the metrics and they throw all these million mile an hour fastballs and their curveballs do this and their cutters do that. Landon Knack is a skilled pitcher. He is a guy that can put the ball on a pinpoint. He can throw strikes with four different pitches, needs to get healthy, and then he needs to have a good year. This is a big, big, big year for Landon Knack. He's super motivated. He did a lot of work to his diet in the offseason. He did a lot of work to his body. He did a lot of work just going back. You know, it's kind of like a football coach whenever you're calling a game and you put in all these exotic blitz packages, and all of a sudden you've given up two or three touchdowns early on because your kids aren't in the right position. And then all of a sudden you just kind of go back to your base defense to let your kids play fast. That's kind of what Landon Knack's doing this year in terms of his pitch mix. He's going back to what's always made him good. He tried to tinker with some things last year, didn't work out for him. He's going back to his original four-pitch mix of a fastball, curveball, changeup, slider, and he's going to go back to what he knows the best, and he's going to trust it and rely on it. We talked about Orlando said a minute ago, definition of trusting yourself. That's exactly what Landon Knack is going to do with his stuff this year. So super excited about Landon Knack. Have a comment. Absolutely love the way Eddie's plays the game. Talking about Eddie's Leonard shortstop. And again, with Gavin Lux being injured, you know, there's that gap. Of course, the Dodgers have made some moves to get some shortstops in the system. But, you know, Eddie's finished at high A last year. The interesting thing will be, will he make it up to, you would assume he's going to start in Double A Tulsa. Hi, Valerie. How are you doing this evening? Good evening to you. Thank you for joining the show tonight. Appreciate it. We've talked about a whole bunch of different things, a bunch of pitchers, a bunch of all the roster cuts. We'll probably go back over them again whenever we're done talking about this. But, yeah, so Landon Knack, excited about him, seeing if he can stay healthy, seeing the motivation from him, and seeing how we move on from there. So there are some of my thoughts on those guys. Okay, so Dustin May. Let's get a good conversation going on. We have a great crowd right now. Let's talk about Dustin May. Okay, let's circle back around to him. I cannot tell you how excited I am about Dustin May, okay? I'm going to say it again. Tommy John, 12 to 13 months from a physical perspective. That means that you can start throwing full speed in that time period. That does not mean that you're just ready to go on a major league mound and start locating, commanding, and controlling your pitches like a major league pitcher needs to do in that time frame. So, I said it last year during, you know, whenever he came back, you know, that he wasn't going to be ready to help the Dodgers down the stretch last year. Not from a physical perspective, but from a feels perspective. It then takes you, after that 12 or 13 months, it takes you a while to get your feels back. I think he's there. I'm super excited. Okay, super pumped to see what Landon can do this season. Okay, so let's get some comments going on Dustin May. What do you think he's going to bring to the table for the Dodgers this year? How many innings is he going to throw? Is he going to throw 100 innings? Is he going to throw, you know, 75 innings? Is he going to throw 125 innings? What do you think the role for Dustin May is going to be? I think he's going to be absolutely lights out. In my opinion, he has the best stuff of anybody in the system. May is a beast and looks comfortable again. He looked uncomfortable last year. Totally agree with that. Super excited about the role that Dustin... How many innings do you think he's going to throw? Orlando? Austin? Valerie? Jeremy? How many innings do you think that Dustin May is going to throw this year for the Dodgers? That'll be interesting because then that affects, you know, the five rookies with, you know the fewer amount of innings those guys throw, the more opportunities there are for like a Gavin Stone or a Bobby Miller who's not even on the 40-man roster yet. Noah Syndergaard. Okay, here's another topic. He's been effective, but his velo, you know, Noah thought he would get back up to 100, and he still might, okay? But the velo's been down so far. Does that worry you? Okay, again, he's another one of those guys coming off of a Tommy John, and, you know, he's been quoted as saying a couple of times that he came to the Dodgers because everything they touch turns to gold. Let's get a conversation going about Noah Syndergaard. What do you think his role for the Dodgers are going to be this year? Okay, so like, here's the conversation about him. Is he going to be, A, totally back, like to where he's throwing 100 miles an hour and is a Cy Young type pitcher and can be a bell cow of a staff? Or is it going to be just kind of back where he's throwing like 94, 95, limited to about 120 due to the Dodger philosophy? I would agree with that, Valerie. Probably like 140. I feel like they will slow play May, save his arm for the postseason. I totally agree with that, and I think that's the right decision. I also think that's the right way to approach Clayton Kershaw and Dustin May and Noah Syndergaard. Hi, Tommy. How you doing? I'm thinking 100 innings is good. We're all in the same ballpark there. I'm glad you joined. Thank you so much for joining. That is fantastic. I would agree with that. So, Noah Syndergaard. Okay, so let's talk about this. Okay, let me give you some options. Okay, is he A, going to be all the way back and throwing 100 miles an hour, being dominant, Cy Young guy, best pitcher in baseball? Is he going to be kind of back 94, 95 and be that 3.5, 4.5 ERA guy that's kind of a mid-staff guy? Or is he going to be a guy that's throwing 91, 92, 93, 94 like he is right now, although he's been effective in getting outs, but ends up not getting back to just the pure stuff that he's always had? Which one is he going to be? Let's get that conversation going. Dustin's stuff looks incredible so far. I'll say coming after TJ, he throws 90 to 120. Yeah, go out on a limb there a little bit, Austin. Yeah, no doubt it. Nothing more than that. I would agree with that. Orlando thinks maybe 140, so I think that would use these young arms to eat up innings. We are all on the same page there. Again, you can do that because there's so many playoff spots now. You don't have to win 150 games to get in to the playoffs. Okay, so nothing more than that. I have to be careful since he hasn't thrown more than 100 innings pitched since 2019. Great point there. So Dustin May, I think we can all agree, I don't think he's going to throw more than, I would agree, I don't think he's going to throw more than 120 innings. I would be surprised if he got that high. Okay, so again, Noah Syndergaard, is he going to A, be around 100 and be dominant? Is he going to be in the mid-90s, 94 to 96, and just kind of be a 3.5 to 4.5 ERA guy? Or is he going to stay with the velo where it's at right now and be a fifth starter? I mean, which one's he going to be? And how many innings is Noah Syndergaard going to throw? Thor will be better, but would need 2 years to get back under Dodger pitching coaches. He'll throw about 130 innings. Yeah, I could see that. What else do you guys think about that? What are some of your other thoughts about that as far as, the role of Noah Syndergaard this year? So we'll get back to some more of those thoughts. Okay, another topic that I wanted to talk about tonight was JD Martinez. Are you worried at all about his offense, the offense of JD Martinez? And I'm trying to scroll to it. I had a post the other day that talked about JD Martinez, and I'm going to get to that here in just a second. So you guys give me your thoughts. Leave your thoughts in the comments, please, about JD Martinez and whether you are concerned about his offense or not. Of course, he's off to a slow start. We know that. And, the Dodgers brought him over for $10 million to have that DH role. So really his only value to the team at this point, and I mean, you would have to think, would be to be in the DH role. So are you worried about the slow start from JD Martinez? What do you think about him? Okay, so leave your thoughts. Tell me what you think. What do you think JD Martinez is going to end up hitting this year? What type of offensive performance is he going to give the Dodgers this year? Again, I'm trying to scroll to get that exact post so I can give you some numbers here as far as to put into perspective some of the spring trainings that JD Martinez has had in the past. By the way, I was scrolled back by. Did you guys see Guillermo Zuniga hit 102 the other night for Colombia? Of course, he's from Cartagena, and so that meant a lot to him. And then Jose Ramos hit an absolute bomb of a home run for Panama. That was pretty cool to see him do that as well. But, okay, so Ryan Ward also is off to a good start. So, okay, let me get back to this, and let's talk about this just for a second here. Okay, so what kind of start or what kind of season is JD Martinez going to have? I can tell you this. JD Martinez on four other occasions has hit like 215 for spring training. Okay, I'll say Thor will throw 100-ish innings of not elite fastball velocity. I would agree with that. Okay, totally agree with that. So that would be the 100 innings of 3.5 to 4.5 ERA at 93-95. Okay, I would agree with that. And he gets 100 innings of that. That puts him as a number five starter. I would totally agree with that. Think he may have to rethink how he approaches hitters if he can't reach elite velocity. No doubt about that. Absolutely no doubt about that. Okay, if JD doesn't figure it out, I feel Bush's bat can be an option. You're preaching to the choir. Michael Bush can flat stroke. You know, that's the collateral damage of going and getting a JD Martinez. I don't mean that negatively because I love the acquisition of JD. He's been a fantastic offensive player in the major leagues. You got to go get that guy if you're the Dodgers. No doubt about it. I don't mean it from that perspective. But the collateral damage is you take an elite, a really good hit tool of Michael Bush and you make it very difficult for him to get major league at-bats. That was the collateral damage of JD Martinez. So, Orlando, you are 100% correct. If JD Martinez doesn't figure it out, Michael Bush is right there waiting to take over. But I'll tell you this, they're going to give JD Martinez until August to figure it out because he has a major league track record. So, I mean, I just think they're going to give him that long to figure it out. And the reason is, you know, like four or five different times, he has been really bad as far as his batting averages in spring training and then hit like over 300 for the season. So, you know, if you actually go back and look, this is pretty common for him to struggle at this time of the year, and it has absolutely no indication whatsoever. It's not an indicator whatsoever of the type of season he will have. So, you know, he's going to be around great hitters. He's going to be around, you know, an offense that can protect him. So I think JD Martinez, you know, I'm not worried. I don't know what kind of season he's going to have, but I'm not worried about what's happening right now. Now, Jose Ramos's blast and outfield assist in the World Baseball Classic was very cool to see. Jose Ramos, tell you what, when he hits a home run, that dude hits a home run. No doubt about it. Only thing I'd like to see Jose do, two things. He's such a great athlete. He needs to steal more bases. He only stole like four bases last year. As good of an athlete as he is, he needs to steal more bases, and then obviously he's got to quit striking out as much as he does. I mean, at some point you can't strike out as much as he does, right? So I think if he can cut down, kind of like the James Altman deal, if he can cut down on his strikeouts and then learn how to steal bases, you know, where he can be a 20 guy, a 20-30 guy, a 30-20 guy, and then on occasional you're like Johnny Lucas turned into, maybe a 30-30 outside guy, that, you know, I think – that's the direction that Ramos needs to go, you know, if he wants to be the starting center fielder for the Dodgers. Honestly, not worried about JD yet. No, me neither. Could be blinded by what I saw in Detroit, but he has shown he can be one of the best hitters in the game. No doubt about it. Okay, so there's JD Martinez. My thoughts on him, I'm not worried about him. He's done this in the past consistently where he has not hit well in spring training and then had good regular seasons. I'm not saying that's going to happen this year. I'm saying the Dodgers are going to give him every chance to prove that it will, and I think that's probably the right call. And because, like Orlando said, because of that, that's another block for Michael Bush. Michael Bush is completely blocked. If you can't tell, I'm whining and crying about that, and I can't get over it because I love the way Michael Bush hits. Okay, Max Muncy. Okay, super pumped about him. First of all, I'm going to say this. I saw him all the way back to Keller, Texas, all those showcases, you know, they would come to the Oklahoma City area and got to see him there. And then I got to see him at Baylor. He came to Oklahoma State, got to see him in Stillwater. Then I got to see him at the Bricktown Ballpark in the Big 12 tournament. And so, like, when the Dodgers signed him, whatever year it was, and I showed up and they said, now hitting for the Oklahoma City Dodgers, Max Muncy, I was like, oh, wow, cool, this dude can stroke. So when he started hitting and started turning heads, it was like, yeah, I mean, this guy was just born hitting. So Max Muncy can flat hit. Okay, I say that to say this. He was the worst defensive AAA baseball player I'd ever seen as an infielder at that level for a time. Okay, so now when I watch him field ground balls, it's just amazing for me to see how good he has become defensively. Now, whether you think he's a great defender or not, okay, I'm not trying to make that comment, but what I am trying to say is from where he came from, when he came to the Dodgers, till now, okay, I would have never, ever, ever thought that he could have been a starting third baseman on a World Series championship team. Now he's judging baseballs. He looks comfortable. So the developmental system for the Dodgers has absolutely worked wonders with him. If you go back to his August of last year, the Loons really didn't. Okay, here's a comment. The Loons really didn't steal bases last season. Would love to see that aspect added to Ramos's game. Also, if he can cut his K's to, that's what I've said, and I said that about Altman. Just 25%. Okay, that's fair. Okay, 25% is fair, which is what James Altman did last year. Okay, Ramos, so cut the strikeout rate to 22 to 25-ish percent, which is the comment from Austin. Then steal, you know, 15 to 20 bases, which he's totally capable of. Then he is a 5-tool player at that point. Okay, Max Muncy, going back all the way to August of last year. Of course, we know he got injured, and then he struggled for about 4 months last year. But going back to August, he had a good August with, you know, his average like 256, something like that, OPS over 800. Had a good September, OPS around 900, and now he's off to a good start in spring training. I do think, I would have never said this before, Happy Muncy looks to be back. I'll be much happier if he stays back all year. I think he will. I think he will. I think Max Muncy's going to have a good year. I think last year, you know, I think he would be the first one to tell you it was below his standards, and I think that being below his standards has motivated him to not have a year again that's going to be below his standards, and because of that, he's not going to. I think Max Muncy's going to have a very good year for all those reasons, and you stack on top of the fact that I just think he's good. So I think Max Muncy's going to have a great year. So, okay, so those are pretty much all the agenda items. I'm going to circle back around. We have a really good crowd right now. I'm going to ask one more time, any surprises? Michael Bush, okay, I'll be super curious what happens with the shift rules to Muncy. Had a batting average on balls in play of 227 last season, well below league average. Doubt it gets up to 300, but if it's 260-ish, it'll help his game. That wouldn't have crossed my mind. I think you're onto something right there. Ryan Noda was big that way, too. I saw him a million different times just hit one of those 110-mile-an-hour line drives to right field that's been a base hit forever, and they had that little rover guy there, and he was out. You know, so, yeah, hey, very good. So that'll help Max Muncy as well. So let's circle back around. Roster cuts. The most recent round, Michael Bush, Diego Cartay, Yorbit Vivas, Eddie's Leonard, Johnny DeLuca, Andy Páez. Those are the guys that were on the 40-man and were optioned to the minors. The non-roster invitees, the guys that weren't on the 40-man roster but were invited to spring training, that were sent to minor league camp, Matt Andrees, Bobby Miller, Jamai Jones. Okay, so those are the guys that were sent down. So any surprises there? Some more notable names. Let's go over the notable names again. Left off the MLB pipeline list. Let me remind you again that starting next week, I'm going to release a feature, a couple features a day, but a single feature for every one of the players in the Dodgers, in the MLB pipeline Dodgers top 30 prospect list. So we're going to have 30 different features, one for each one of those players. So we hope you check those out. Spread the word. Okay, some of the notables left off: Hunter Fiducia, Kyle Hurt, Nick Robertson, Mark Washington, Drew Avens, Carson Tather, Andre Jackson, Brandon Lewis, Cole Percival, Ben Harris, Taylor Young, Devin Mann, Jordan Leisure, Lyle Lockhart Jr., Alec Gamboa, John Rooney, Justin Yurchak, Aldry Acosta, Carlos Duran, Yunil Choi, Braden Fisher, Ryan Sublette, Kendall Williams, Emanuel Vargas, Jake Vogel, Peter Hubeck, Justin Robleski, Sean McClain, Bubba Aline, Kyle Nevin, left off. So, okay, really looking forward to the features. Thank you so much. We had a great crowd tonight. I'm sorry Chase wasn't with us. He will be with us on the features. He'll be with us next week for Dodgers Dogs, so I'm looking forward to that. Hey, just a reminder, if you like this content, click that like button, leave a comment, tell all your friends, spread the word about Dodgers Daily. We love this. We have the best crowd on earth. Orlando, Valerie, Austin, and everybody in the crowd that joins in. You guys are so wonderful. Make this show so fun to do. Okay, we want this show to keep growing, so click that like button, tell all your friends, spread the word about Dodgers Daily. Spread the word that each week at 6:30 Pacific time, surprised that Miller was sent down and kept De La Rosa. Yeah, and De La Rosa has a history with the Dodgers. And, you know, 2011, he was with the Dodgers, had an outing in 2012 with the Dodgers, then had the Tommy John, he was traded to Boston. Yeah, that is surprising, but they have an agenda with Bobby Miller, they have a system, so they're sticking to that right now. But, hey, go ahead and spread the word about Dodgers Dogs each Wednesday, 6:30 Pacific time. We are going to have a live show, Dodgers Dogs, so stick with us and spread the word about Dodgers Dogs and Dodgers Daily. and so we can keep growing. Hey, thanks again for tuning in. To all you fans out there, it was a terrific crowd, a terrific show tonight, and go Dodgers.